We'll proceed to the sixth case, Abbott v. Astru. Mr. Sutterfield.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Attorney David Sutterfield, if it pleases the Court and Counsel. This is a case, it's a Social Security disability case that was decided at the Step 5, and at Step 5, as the Court is aware, the burden shifts to the Commissioner to demonstrate that there is other work that the claimant can perform.
With respect to a very basic bottom line question, please. You conceded in your reply brief that she's ineligible to adjust her status. Isn't that dispositive of this appeal?
I'm not sure I understood your question, or maybe I misstated. Mr. Abbott's insured status expired December 31 of 2004, and he was claiming an onset date prior to that. So if the case is, and our view is that he's demonstrated he became disabled before then, so I'm not sure if I'm understanding or answering your question.
I'm sorry. Okay. The ALJ considered his memory problems in determining whether to credit his recollection of the job duties.
Correct. Would you?
But did the ALJ consider the memory problems in determining his ability to make the vocational adjustment from those former jobs to that of caseworker?
He determined that his mental capabilities declined after his insured status expired, making that not relevant in terms of that issue. That was his analysis. In terms of
I was on a different case, is what I was.
Okay.
All right. We have nine cases, you know. We normally stop at six, see, so. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. In Mr. Abbott's case, he's over the age of 55 at the time, so then the issue becomes, does he have skills that are transferable with very little, if any, vocational adjustment in terms of tools, work processes, the industry, and work settings? And the vocational expert under those parameters was able to identify a single job. And it's our position that in the course of the hearing that there was adequate question of the vocational expert to raise significant questions regarding that. If one will note that, you know, and I think the case law in the circuit recognizes that at the hearing, the plaintiff doesn't really become familiar with the vocational expert testimony until you get into the hearing. In this instance, there's a report, but again, I get the record containing that report at the hearing, anywhere from no more than 60 minutes in advance of the hearing, and certainly not an opportunity to analyze the vocational expert's report. Also, I think it was interesting in the appendix to going to be page 4 of the reply brief of the respondent, the second paragraph, noting that full descriptions and underlying data of the occupations can be downloaded by a special password-protected website. It makes it a little difficult for plaintiff's counsel to deal with some of these issues at the hearing. In any event, we did adequately deal with those issues, and it's our position that with a single job that we did, in fact, demonstrate, when you look at the record, that there is significant vocational adjustment with regard to each of those four criteria, and a fifth area that the commissioner, without factual or legal basis, namely general education development, rejects as a criteria to be addressed by this court. I think that's a fallacious argument simply from the standpoint that they rely on these vocational experts to come in and provide the testimony, and this particular vocational expert had, in fact, identified that the GED or general education development skills under the skills acquired on page 166 of his report that Mr. Abbott's score is a 4, and then you look at the what is required for the caseworker position, it's a 5. that deals with that would be dealing with much more complex rational processes. Again, when one compares the two, it certainly is different. And again, when you look at the regulation, little, if any, change in vocational adjustment, that's significant. And it's there's certainly no basis for the commissioner who relies on and by case law needs to make sure that things are in conformity with the DOT to say, oh, guess what? We're going to tell these VEs to ignore part of the DOT. And when we, again, when we look at
well, these prior jobs, sorry for interrupting you, but sure. These prior jobs, job coach and teacher's aide, did generally include a fairly wide range of skills, didn't they?
Certainly not as he testified, as the claimant testified to Mr. Abbott. And what's interesting there is that Mr. Abbott's had an earlier application that he dropped, which is not uncommon. People are not very sophisticated, which I think the court should take note of, but he dropped after he got his denial. And the consistency of his description of his job descriptions all through this are very basic. You know, performing takedowns of people that he's monitoring in a classroom setting, watching them in a workplace and making sure they're not goofing off, those aren't skills. And those are things that the vocational expert indicated that going to the workplace and watching people is a rehab aid, and going and watching people in a classroom setting to make sure they're not disturbing others as a classroom monitor, neither of which have transferable skills. So you get into that credibility issue. Conceding that, let's assume argumentatively that the vocational expert said, no, he's absolutely right on a credibility finding. Vocational expert has correctly identified these skills. When you look at them, they don't match. There's an adjustment all across the board. The one position that the vocational expert mentioned several times in his testimony was a DCFS caseworker, or, you know, a DCFS worker. Well, what is there in terms of being a are you going to just go in and yank people out of who've been a teacher's aide, and now they're going to know how to interact with the police, attorneys, people who are in spousal abuse situations, do intake forms, interpret laws that DCFS workers do? No way. Same thing with a job coach. Are you going to be able to do that? One's education setting. One is a vocational training setting. DCFS is governmental services, different industry, totally different industry, totally different work circumstances in terms of the industry, in terms of the work processes. When you look at the DOT description, you have to be able to interpret laws, statutes, matters of that sort. What the vocational expert continually uses, deal with people with behavior disorders, deal with people with behavior disorders. Well, cooks in nursing homes have to do that. It doesn't connect. Just because you do those type of things doesn't automatically put you into where, okay, I'm going to complete this form, make sure that it's done correctly, that it's been processed correctly. Maybe it's a Social Security disability representative. To say that somebody steps in and is automatically capable of being that type of caseworker without significant training is, again, in conflict with the DOT and in conflict with common sense. And that's what happened in this instance. The vocational expert was questioned on each of these subject areas by myself in the course of the hearing. His question with regard to the work settings. And what was interesting with regard to the teacher settings is at page 539 of his testimony, the VE talked about the teacher's aide dealing with complex crisis situations. Well, when we look at the reason and development, what do we see? We see working with concrete variables. You know, there's a total conflict between, and these are types of things that should have alerted the ALJ, work processes. Again, he's very confusing testimony. With regard to the job coach, the reason I'd excluded it was because you have to be able to show them what to do and how to do it. So did he include the job coach description or not? Again, there's an alert to the ALJ, and when you look at that, you need to verify, you know, what in fact he, and then note the disparity between the two. The industry, we've talked about that, and the work processes, again, when you look at what is involved, doing research, looking at laws, matters of that sort, there's a major issue. Very quickly, credibility issue. No showing at all that Mr. Abbott has a short-term memory problem. That, you know, and the psychologist indicated that's a daily function. That'd be like remembering to take your medicine. keeping appointments. Is today the trash day or not the trash day? Did I leave something on the stove or not leave something on the stove? It has nothing to do with remembering what his job tasks were that he did for 15 years, 8 years ago. That's not a, there's no plausible reason for the ALJ to have made that kind of connection. I'll save my time for later.
Thank you, Mr. Sutterfield. Ms. Dumont.
Thank you. Good morning.
Before you even begin, there is a technical question that I think needs to be answered, and it's this. The Department of Labor has apparently abandoned the DOT and replaced it with a new database, the Occupational Network Database, ONET.
Correct.
ONET. And that's created some confusion, I think, as to where these job classifications in these decisions come from. Could you please clarify which version of the DOT your agency uses, who updates it now that the Department of Labor has abandoned it, how we can access those updates?
Well, the ONET, first of all, is available online for free, and it does have the dot crosswalks. That's how I was able to find the job coach position that was cited by the VE at the hearing. Let me go back to your question. You asked how we could access it, and you asked who updates it.
Yeah.
Really, SSA starts with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. As a starting point, we kind of assume that that's generally a reliable source for basic information about how jobs are performed. It has been updated. That's why we do use VEs. We do ask them to explain any discrepancies between their testimony and the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. That kind of thing. But we will use the published form sometimes. We also use the electronic form of the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, which I note is available through Crosswalks on the ONET. It's available on other databases that we use. I was able to find this information on the Internet. I'm sorry, I'm not sure I'm addressing all of your questions.
Well, I wondered just which version of the DOT
okay.
Your agency uses.
Well, I think we will use the electronic versions, which starts with, I think, everything certainly that's in the published 1991 version, and the Department of Labor had come up with these 23 jobs shortly after it was published, didn't go through the expense of republishing it, but they did provide these to the people who were developing the ONET, and that's at the point that they had this database that was, I think you had to have a password to get on at that point because they were still developing the database at that point. At this point, it's available to everyone. But, yes, those 23 jobs or 24 jobs, I think it might be, are included now in the electronic database.
Well, I really appreciate that. Thank
yeah.
you.
And certainly if it were beyond the dot, the VE could have testified about that as well.
Now, do you agree that the caseworker position requires a reasoning development level of 5, whereas Mr. Abbott's prior position warranted a reasoning developmental level of 4?
It appears to me to be the case in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. Yes, that is not something that was evident in the evidence before the ALJ.
Then what in the record indicates that he could meet the higher level, especially given the major memory deficits that the ALJ noted?
Can we back up just a minute on the memory deficits? The ALJ... We've got to keep in mind in this case, it's very important to remember, we're looking at an 11-month period in 2004. The ALJ had to decide whether he was disabled between February 1st, 2004 and December 31st, 2004. His hearing wasn't until 2007, almost 3 years later, and yes, unfortunately for Mr. Abbott, he had developed some additional problems after that point. And that's what the ALJ found, that by the time we had this hearing, he developed some pretty serious problems, but he had to look at the condition in 2004. So what the VE testified, and this is what the ALJ had before him, was neither of these jobs requires a degree. These are the kinds of skills that he learned in this job. This is how they transfer into this job. That was completely reliable testimony that the ALJ could rely upon. So it really wasn't, and I'm not even telling you today that I'm sure that a GED discrepancy of 1 really does make a difference. I would want to ask a vocational expert that.
Then shouldn't this case be remanded?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. ALJs can't be expected to go back when they have a completely clear record from a VE and comb through the Dictionary of Occupational Titles and other sources to look for potential problems. Counsel had the opportunity to do that. Now, this court has recognized it's not always convenient it's not convenient and counsel aren't able all the time to do thorough cross-examination at the hearing. We've recognized that, and so does the agency. And that's why we allow people to look at the Dictionary of Occupational Titles after the hearing, to submit things after the hearing, and counsel did that in this case.
But doesn't the ALJ have the duty to make a full record, even if counsel doesn't carry through on something?
He does have a duty to do a full record, and this court has held that if he gets reliable VE testimony, that's enough, that he doesn't have to second guess. Then, unless that there is some obvious error on the record, he doesn't have an obligation to go looking for more that might potentially undermine that testimony. That's what he had here. Even counsel himself in his post-hearing brief did not raise these issues. He could have gone to the DOT at that time. He could have looked these things up and submitted or said, I couldn't find one. What's going on? That was the time to do it. He doesn't get a second bite at the apple just because he failed to raise those questions at the right time. The VE probably could have answered these. As far as we know, these don't look like glaring discrepancies to me. They don't look like something that seems so obvious, oh, my gosh, we got to send this back. We've got to stand behind these ALJs. They have an enormous workload. They have to be able to rely on this reliable VE testimony, and that's what he did in this case. This was a very difficult case. I think it was a close case, and it turned on, really, a very difficult credibility determination. Did he believe the VE who said, I know how this job was performed for this employer at the school at that time? It's really difficult for me to believe that someone who worked at that job in that position for that employer for that amount of time didn't develop these skills. Could the ALJ believe that, or did he believe appellant?
Well, I know this is going to sound terribly simplistic to you, but if his memory problems were significant enough so that the ALJ is just discounting his testimony as to, you know, his past jobs, those memory issues are also relevant to whether he can transition to the caseworker positions or could achieve the reasoning development level that's required of that position. And I don't think the ALJ, he didn't identify the specific skills that Abbott had required as a job coach, nor did he explain how those skills would transfer to the caseworker position. So I really have a bit of a problem.
But the VE did, Your Honor. The VE went into quite a bit of detail
about... But the VE isn't the ALJ.
That's correct, but he did go into detail in his decision about why he believed that ALJ when he talked about what skills that this man had acquired at those jobs. And the VE was very explicit. He knows how to deal with people with behavior problems. He knows how to deal with these kinds of plans, these kinds of situations. And frankly, I think we're getting a little bit off here today because counsel seems to be raising this DCFS position and a lot of other things that were not in the record. If you go back and look at what the VE actually testified to, it does all mesh together. And no, the VE didn't give confusing evidence about whether he was taking out the job coach job. He said, I can't perform that anymore. I do take it out that way, but he did get the transferable skills. And that there was no dispute, I don't think, about what the job generally requires and what kind of skills you should have gotten out of this job. So it was not as if counsel was saying, well, the VE's wrong about how this job is generally performed. What he's saying is, I didn't perform that job. And that's the part that the ALJ didn't believe.
Well, the ALJ did not give his reasons for concluding that Abbott would have to make very little adjustment as a caseworker. And I, for one, must tell you that I can't tell whether the ALJ considered the different reasoning levels or exactly how we resolved the issue.
The reasoning levels were not considered. That's absolutely right, because they were not raised. With the ALJ, and the ALJ didn't go into a lot of the detail, frankly, because he's not the expert. He has to be able to rely on these experts. And the expert went into a lot of detail, both in direct examination and cross-examination of the specific skills and why he thought he would have the skills, both in terms of like reporting, the types of documents he would have had to analyze, those types of things. Those are exactly the things that the VE looked at. There was no reason to question that at the hearing.
And the ALJ does not have to look at the person in front of him at this point.
In this case he didn't. In this case, what he's saying is, I have to find him disabled by December 31st, 2004. There was only one mention of depression prior to that date, and that was to a treating physician. After that, he didn't mention it several times. His mental status was rated as good in January 2005, which was after his insured status expired. It really wasn't, and even his social worker was saying that his mental limitations really started in October 2005, which is well after his insured status expired. That's the law. He had to show he was disabled by that time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ron. Mr. Satterfield.
I want to limit my rebuttal simply to the remarks that the VE went into a lot of detail in terms of why these were transferable skills. Teacher's aid skills. Follow through with plans that the teachers identified. Deal with a wide variety of students. Deal with problems that are incumbent upon the ages that children that the children may have. Deal with people with emotional problems. How to handle emotionally disturbed children, to read an individual education plan. There's no nexus between that and a caseworker. And again, the VE didn't identify the DCFS caseworker as a representative type of casework position. And then we talked about the job coach position. He again indicated at page 547, a caseworker who would have to go in more in depth, write a care plan that a job coach would follow. Then when I was trying to compare it to, what do you have to do with regard to these two? How do you compare these two? And he said specifically, a caseworker would have to go in more in depth. And there again, that's the lure to the ALJ.
So an analysis that would be required of dealing with an adult would be more challenging than the analysis of dealing with a child?
Certainly. I mean, an adult's going
to
know.
I mean, as far as communicating with the individuals that you have to deal with, Mr. Satterfield?
Sure. And you're going to have to do so with an underlying knowledge base. What is it as a caseworker? What is it you're dealing with? Is it Social Security regulations, public aid regulations, what DCFS regulations?
There's a volume of information that's needed that was not required in the prior position with a teacher plan or the like.
Correct. And there's no nexus made by the VE at all.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Satterfield. Thank you, Ms. DeWine. The case is taken under advisement.